98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
These are the top stories of the day. We give them to you at 4 o'clock every day here on the Burns and Gambo show and our reaction to the top stories of the day. We're going to start and end with college athletics, in particular the Alliance and the Pac-12's participation in the Alliance with the Big Ten and the ACC. It was announced today. Shortly after that announcement was made, Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov told the Athletic website that the conference will decide by the end of the week whether or not they will expand their membership.
We don't think there's any risk at staying at 12 teams. With respect to bars, that is something we're going to be discussing with our presidents and chancellors. As you know, we take into account athletics, academics, cultural fit, all very important to us. But there is no set bar that anyone needs to clear.
It was Kliavkov about 3 weeks ago, I believe, at the Pac-12 Media Day saying we don't have to expand. And this is what our, you know, a bar for expansion. But interesting today, the news kind of comes out to the Athletic. Hey, we're going to let you know by Friday whether we have a plan to expand or not.
I think if they expand, they go east. Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, that area. I don't think they expand out west. And again, it's the chancellors and the presidents that make this decision, not the ADs, not the commissioner. So academics would have a huge role on if they expand or not.
Diamondbacks pitcher Caleb Smith suspended 10 games today by Major League Baseball for the use of a foreign substance last week. He is appealing the ruling, and Torrey Lovello told us earlier that he is still standing by his lefty.
I'm going to stand by him. I've been saying that from the very beginning. He's a very open, honest, upstanding guy, and if he was cheating, he would tell people he was cheating. He'd be the first one to admit guilt. But he is dug in and standing by the idea that he was just doing things normally as he usually does. And his appeal, hopefully he'll be able to get his word out.
He can pitch while he's appealing, and so he's appealing right now, but he was taken out of the game. His glove was sent to New York, and apparently Major League Baseball didn't like what they found on the glove, and that's why they dropped the 10-game suspension on him today.
He was so adamant that he didn't do anything wrong. If I was cheating, I know they checked my hat and my glove. I would have never cheated in that way. He was very convincing. I believed him. And then he was going after the umpires. They had to hold him back as after they announced that he was, you know, getting kicked out of that game. So, but then, listen, Major League Baseball checked it. They said there's a foreign substance. Okay. I want to know, and I asked Lovello this, what's the foreign substance? He didn't know.
Yeah.
What did they find on the glove? Tell me, what did they find? I want to know, what did they find on the glove?
There's no word on that.
I want to know what the foreign substance is.
Sure. And maybe we'll get more information about that when the appeal process begins. Josh Rosen, now officially a member of the Atlanta Falcons. That is his fifth NFL team. He was signed there because A.J. McCarron was lost with a torn ACL over the weekend. Now he immediately is plunged into a battle to be the backup quarterback there, and he'll get a chance to do it. Matt Ryan hasn't played this preseason. Cliff Kingsbury today asked about the former Cardinal quarterback, believes Rosen just needs the right situation.
Yeah, that position is, a lot of it's based on situation. As we know, he's obviously talented, very smart. And if he gets in the right situation, you know, after being around him just for a month or so, I mean, he could take full advantage of it. But got to land in the right situation.
I don't know. When you've been on 5 teams in 3 years, I Cliff's being polite. I'm sure Josh appreciates that. Don't you think the right situation would have presented itself by now when you're cycling through teams as fast as Rosen is?
I have this odd feeling we're going to be following Josh Rosen forever.
We might be.
Josh Rosen just signed with a nonprofit organization.
I thought you meant with football.
Like, yeah, he's going to be like, no, I'm just saying, like, I just feel like we have a tie to him. There's always going to be a tie.
Oh, I think we'll always be tied to him. I thought what you were referring to and what I think is going to happen is that he will be perpetually one of those guys that, hey, we signed Josh Rosen. A week later, hey, we released Josh Rosen. Hey, we needed a camp body, so we brought in Josh Rosen in July. And in mid-August, we decided we were going to cut him from the roster because we don't need him anymore. I think Josh Rosen is going to live in that world for at least a couple of more years.
Yeah.
Jared Dudley's playing days are over.
JD!
But the former Suns forward will be joining the Mavericks as an assistant coach this season to Jason Kidd.
He wanted to play one more year to get to 15 with the Lakers, and he thought he was going to have it. But in the end, it didn't work out. They decided to go a different area in that roster spot, and so he had a chance to coach. He didn't want to sit out very long. He just renewed his lease in L.A. too, so he's still got the place in L.A.
What are you, his real estate agent?
I just know he just renewed his lease. I was talking to him a couple days ago. He renewed his lease. But, yeah, Jason Kidd offered him a spot on the front of the bench, not the back of the bench, but the front of the bench to be an assistant. He'll probably be a head coach within a couple of years.
But our top story of the day today, it was the first story that we mentioned here in the 4 o'clock reset, and it is the top story of the day. The announcement today, the joint announcement, and it was literally a press conference with the three commissioners of the ACC, of the Big Ten, and, of course, George Kliavkov of the Pac-12, announcing their alliance. Details were very hard to come by for exactly what this alliance means. Scheduling? Yes, we'll try to schedule each other for some games, but they were very clear, and this is Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, we'll work to schedule each other as part of this alliance, but we will honor our current schedules and our current contracts. We're not going to break any contracts because of this alliance.
We promise each other is that we're not going to interfere with any existing contracts that exist. So this is not about getting out of contracts and blowing anything up. This is about honoring those existing contracts, but also building relationships between these three like-minded conferences as we look forward from a scheduling standpoint, not only in football, but in women's and men's basketball, and also in Olympic sports, and to see if there's opportunity to build early season, mid-season tournaments or unique games that will come together.
So they're not going to change their schedules. I looked at ASU's future schedules. They've got, in the next 12 years, they've already got games on the books, a home-and-home against Mississippi State, home-and-home against Texas A&M, home-and-home against Florida, home-and-home against LSU, a home-and-home against Texas.
It's a lot of SEC schools.
It's all SEC schools. I mean, at least those.
And there's no cancellation. So if you're really trying to stick it to the SEC, and I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to put, you know, paint them into a corner a little bit to where you can control some of the narrative, and the SEC doesn't have all the power in college football. You can say, we're going to team up, and we're going to be able to put these great games together, these great non-conference games, and it's going to be a good selling point to our TV partners. But, man, you're not going to get out of the games that these schools already have. And like you just said with ASU, ASU's not the only one that has SEC schools
on
the schedule. A lot of them do. So, you know, when are you going to break free from that? When are you really going to break free from that? We're talking 12, 13 years down the road?
So there was no specifics on scheduling, how it's going to work and how it's going to be done. As far as, like, these conferences poaching teams, like the SEC poached Texas and Oklahoma, according to George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, there isn't even a signed document that says they can't do this to each other.
There's no signed contract. There's an agreement among three gentlemen, and there is a commitment from 41 presidents and chancellors and 41 athletic directors to do what we say we're going to do. If there's any lack of specificity in the press release, it's because we want to make sure we could deliver 100% of what we promised. So we're aligned in how we want to approach this, but there's no contract. There's no signed document, and there doesn't need to be.
So
what does it mean?
That's the question.
What does it mean?
What does it mean? What exactly does the alliance mean? And the best answer anybody can come up with, and one that was not discussed at all during the conference call with these three commissioners, is simply this. If the SEC and ESPN think that they can completely dictate the future of college football, they're going to have to deal with us, with the three of us aligned, with these 41 school presidents aligned. We are voting together as a block, as a unified.
There's one problem with that.
Hmm.
I'm a major television partner, and I want to do a deal with you guys. But you have a pinky promise? What did you guys do? Just get a little blood on your pinkies, and then pinky swear? What did you do? I got to trust you? I have to do if I have to do some kind of contract with you, knowing that I'm going to get all of these Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC, Big Ten, ACC, Pac-12 games going forward. I need to see it in writing.
Yeah,
I need to know that you are committed to playing each other for 10 years. You're laughing at the pinky, bro. Something's in your head right now. I know. What is it?
Okay, it's the Untouchables. It's
oh, okay.
It's the scene where
I know you got it.
Where Sean Connery says to Kevin Costner, "Do you know what a blood oath is, Mr. Ness?" "I do." "Good, because you just took one." And that's kind of what this did. "Do you know what a blood oath is, George Kliavkov?" "Good, Because you just took one with these other two, except there's nothing on paper. There's nothing. You didn't take a blood oath. There's nothing signed.
No, so if you're.
There's
if
nothing you, that promises so you anything.
If you're ABC, if you're Fox Sports, if you're just anybody, pick any entity that wants to bind, that's not ESPN, that wants to bind you into a contract. I don't have anything. Hey, can you promise me that you schools, that you're going to play each other for the next 15 years if we do a deal? No. Can't even promise you that one of these schools is going to be here next year. One
sure.
may leave.
Hey, Big Ten, can you promise me you're not going to go poach USC and Oregon from the Pac-12? No. There's nothing written that says I can't do that if I want to.
I would love the Ohio State-USC game every 4 years. You're going to be? Can you promise me you're going to play that game? No, you can't.
All the alliance is a message. A message to the SEC and a message to the ESPN. We're you're not going to get anything past us that we don't want to be put past us because we'll vote against it. We're all on the same. We're voting as a block. We're voting as one. So you better make sure we're on board with what you want to do and that we have a say in the room and that you're not in charge of all of this, SEC and ESPN. We've got a voice. We're all together. And that's how it's, that was the only point of today. The only
usually
purpose.
Everything's about money. This didn't seem to be about money.
No, it didn't.
As much as I thought it would.
When we come back, there's a decent chance that the main Cardinal starters will not play Saturday in the final preseason game of the year. Is Cliff Kingsbury concerned about his key guys having so much time off before the start of the regular season? You'll hear from the Cardinals head coach next on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's a number that we've thrown out time and time again here on the Burns and Gambo Show, and the number is 23. And if I remember it right, I went back and counted the number of days. Kyler Murray played Friday against the Kansas City Chiefs. If he doesn't play Saturday in the preseason finale against the New Orleans Saints, that'll be 23 days that will have gone by without Kyler Murray playing a football game. All right, there are obviously many, many others on the Cardinals roster who are going to go an entire preseason without playing a preseason football game. Chandler Jones isn't going to be
in one.
J.J. Watt's not going to be in one. DeAndre Hopkins isn't going to be in one. So Cliff Kingsbury was asked today the week off before the regular season and this long layoff. Are you opposed to it? Is it going to hurt you guys at all? And he said, no, of course not.
Yeah, I mean, last year we didn't have any, you know, we played pretty well to start the season, so I'm not overly concerned with that. The bye week to start the season is going to be unique for everybody, but every NFL team's dealing with that.
Yeah, every NFL team's dealing with it. Lots of NFL teams, we counted 10 quarterbacks, there are probably more that we don't even, that we're not thinking about, who haven't even played so far this preseason. That 23 days number, when you kind of put it in the context of guys who don't play at all, for the Cardinals and other teams, the 23 days might not be a big deal, especially to Cliff's point. When you think about last year, nobody played any preseason. Didn't hinder the Cardinals at all with the way they played.
No, and if you heard what Kyler said about a week ago, 10 days ago, whatever it was, about the practice. Like, I'd rather practice. I'd rather get a good two-hour practice in and work on all of these things with my teammates than go out there in a preseason game and play two series and throw the ball five times. Like, you know, that's... I think everybody anticipates, oh, it'll be great if they can have two 10-play drives. That's 20 plays, and they'll throw the ball 12 times. And, like, that doesn't happen a lot, you know, in these preseason games. You don't always get that. So he feels the practices are more beneficial to him. A lot of guys feel that. But for him, he feels, I'm going to get a lot more out of a practice. As long as you're committed to those practices and you approach those practices the right way with the right mind frame.
That's a good key. Yeah.
As long as you go into it like trying to get something out of it.
Right. If you're out there half-assing it, then you're not going to get anything. You're only going to get out of it what you put into it.
Right.
As long as you're putting into it what you want to get out of it, then you're fine. Practice. Just practice if you want.
Yeah, if you go to school and you go to class and you're determined to get something out of the class, you'll learn something. If you go to school and you're thinking about what you're going to have for lunch and what you're going to do at recess, you're not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah, Cliff was a follow-up question to the head coach of the Cards today. How will you use that extra week off?
We'll definitely get ahead. You know, that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before they have their mandatory break.
Yeah, and by getting ahead, he means getting ahead on Tennessee Titans prep and start working on that opener on September 12th. Look, I think last year and not having a preseason, and I felt this way about preseason football, and I kind of suspect you did too, but I think last year not having any preseason football at all, and largely seeing the quality of play being unaffected at the beginning of the football season when it counted, really highlighted how useless preseason football is. And if you're the, like we've said before, if you're the 47th guy on the roster, if you're the 50th guy on the roster, if you're a seventh round draft pick and you're trying to prove your worth like Eno Benjamin, okay, you're in a different category. But if you're Kyler Murray, if you're J.J. Watt, if you're DeAndre Hopkins, if you're Aaron Rodgers, if you're, hell, if you're Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen, you are a good enough professional, a quality enough football player to play in week one of the regular season without getting a single snap in a preseason game, and you'll be fine. Last year, they were all fine. Everybody played great, and it wasn't that big of a deal. And so I think, man, there's been a lot of just people getting wound up about the preseason, who's playing, who's not, how many reps, how good do they look. Does any of it really matter at all when it's all said and done, when you're talking about your starters? It really doesn't, does it?
I don't think so. But then why does Andy Reid play Patrick Mahomes 33 snaps?
He obviously thinks it matters.
So if to some people it matters, to some it doesn't. To some coaches it matters, to some it doesn't. I mean, if you're Patrick Mahomes, you're not going to your coach saying, hey, this is useless. I'm not getting anything out of this. You're listening to your coach. I want you to play 33 snaps. Okay, coach, I'll play 33 snaps. Here's Patrick Mahomes, one of the biggest stars in the NFL. He's not going to his coach and saying, look, man, I don't want to play.
Yeah.
I don't want to be out there. Think Tom Brady's going to Bruce Arians? Like, Tom Brady played. Some guys, I don't know if these other, if you're Matthew Stafford, right, and you go to McVay, I want to play, I need to get some reps in, then maybe he plays you.
Maybe he does.
Maybe.
I don't know. To your point about Andy Reid, all I could think about is, like, the parent who, you know, demands when their kid goes to school, man, if you don't get A's or B's, we're going to work on you. You need to get A's and B's. All right.
Is that you?
Yeah, of course.
Your parents demanded it?
Demand is strong, but they highly expected it. They highly expected I would come home with A's and B's, all right? Compared to the parent who's like, man, I just want you to graduate. I don't care if you get... Of course. Just graduate. Get a degree. Get a diploma. Because at the end of the day, nobody cares what your grades were. Do you have a degree? Yes or no?
Did you graduate high school?
Did you graduate college? Yes or no? I don't care what grades you got. Did you have a degree?
Don't show GPAs on diplomas.
They don't show GPAs on diplomas, right? What do they call the person who finished last at med school? Doctor. They call him a doctor, and that person makes $250,000 a year. So I think Andy Reid is the parent who, hey, you know what? A's and B's. I want to see a really good report card out of you, Patrick. And maybe that makes him a better coach. But maybe these other coaches are like, I don't care what your GPA is in the preseason. I don't care how many did you graduate? Did you get out of your 4 years of high school with a diploma in your hand? Did you get out of the preseason healthy and ready to play NFL football in week one? Because that's all I care about. I don't care whether you got A's or B's. I don't care if you played 33 snaps. You got out with your health intact and your diploma in hand.
You know, I think when the season starts, I mean, if they get off to a slow start, are people going to look at that? If they get off to a slow start, they go, oh, it's the pre-team play. Maybe, maybe not. Bottom line is, each and every player knows what they have to do to get ready for the start of the regular season.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, Kyler Murray, they all know what they need to do to get ready.
Cliff Kingsbury was asked today if Kyler will play in Game 3. His answer was expectedly vague, but listen to how he ended the answer, and I think you will find the answer you're looking for.
Kyler. Not sure yet.
Does he need any more?
No. No.
No.
No.
No.
No.
He doesn't need to play.
No, he doesn't.
He's behind.
He doesn't need to play.
Which makes you think he's not going to play. It makes you think Kyler's not going to play. And I don't know. Look, would it be fun to watch him? It's fun to watch him play. Does he need to play? No. I said this yesterday. I hope he plays because I want to watch it. But do I, you know, make it more interesting? Listen, Kyler Murray played the other day, three series the other day. And what was our main topic coming into
the show on Monday
was they had three series and they didn't move the ball. So three and outs, like, so it gives us something to, but I don't think in the end, I don't think that really means anything when it looks towards the regular season.
He's been the Cardinals starting linebacker and defensive play caller since the day he was drafted. What does that make for the best and worst case scenario for Zaven Collins this year? In other words, how high is his floor? You'll hear next on the Burns and Gambo show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. with the announcement of the alliance today between the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big Ten. As part of that, George Kliavkov mentioned a possible decision on Pac-12 expansion coming at the end of the week. Expansion? Let's talk to Sarah Cazell about that, see where our Twitter poll is here.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Literally something we've been talking for 10 years. Like, if they're going to expand, who should they bring in? And some of these teams we have been talking about for 10 years, yeah, about whether they should go get them. So any change from when we rolled this question out at 2:30?
Yeah, no, not really.
Not
we,
a lot?
We put four schools out there, and which do you think would be the best addition to the Pac-12 and why? The four we listed are Baylor, Kansas, Oklahoma State, and BYU. Do you guys want to give your picks again?
Kansas. Give me the powerhouse basketball program in the conference.
Baylor. Get yourself into Texas and get a decent football and basketball program.
Okay, neither of those are winning out.
What?
I know. Yeah. BYU, 38% of the vote. Not especially surprising. 26% did go for Baylor. 24% went for Oklahoma State, and 13% for Kansas.
I think it's a slim chance that BYU would come.
I think so, too.
Definitely.
I think it's a slim chance that BYU would
the
be.
The Pac-12 would not change its schedule to accommodate BYU's Sunday limitations.
No, right.
No chance.
They've had 10 years to add BYU. They've had 10 years to add Boise State.
And academically, I don't know that they fit in with the Pac-12.
Yeah. If they were going to do that, they would have done it by now. You're talking about one of the Big 12 leftovers, and you're Kansas' argument about college basketball is intriguing, and it certainly would, but I just don't know if college basketball is driving this conversation as much as, as maybe it would have 20 years ago when you had a chance to get a Kansas like that.
It's probably not.
Yeah, but it is an outside-of-the-box thinking. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Pac-12 is going to stay the Pac-12, but we'll get to that in more detail a little bit later. You can follow us on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page.
Yeah.
Vote on the poll question. Yeah, please. At Burns and Gambo. Sarah manages our account, so when you're talking to it, you're talking to her.
And, speak nicely.
And if you speak to her, speak well, because she's a good person.
Be
and
nice.
She deserves to be treated well and
thank
with
you.
Respect.
Yeah,
no,
you're
trolls.
Welcome.
No trolls. No trolls.
Yeah.
No NTA. No trolls allowed. On the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. Yeah, right. Like that's going to
trolls
stick.
At Gambo98. Just kidding. They already sit there. They already know.
I got them. I got plenty of them.
That's funny. Man, this story took me by surprise today. We haven't talked about this yet. And it's from a guy. I've been a fan of him for a long time. Daniel Jeremiah, who's an analyst for NFL Network, used to be a scout. And he does a lot of work for the draft, and now he's one of the main kind of analysts over at the NFL Network. They were looking through the first round of the draft, and they were coming up with best case scenarios and worst case scenarios for each first round pick.
Okay.
And Jordan, our producer, found this, and it's literally every single guy, right? Actually, I'm reading the headline right there. There's projections for the offensive rookies and the defensive rookies. Daniel Jeremiah projects the best and worst case scenarios for eight intriguing defensive rookies. Okay. Zaven Collins, best case scenario, quote, the Brian Urlacher comparisons start floating around the league after Collins displays his uncanny coverage ability at his size. He finishes first on the team in tackles and emerges as a leader for the group. Okay, that's the best case scenario for Zaven Collins.
Best case.
People look at him and go, oh man, he's Brian Urlacher. That's best case scenario.
Gotcha.
And I would admit, that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario. He has to make a small adjustment to the physicality in the run game before ultimately figuring out how to effectively take on and shed blockers at the NFL level. He trails only Buda Baker in tackles.
Wow.
That's his
worst case scenario?
Worst case scenario for Zaven Collins.
Not
is that
he's deer in the headlights?
Yeah.
And Jordan Hicks, take him off the field.
Yeah, Jordan Hicks is getting all his snaps by week four.
Wow.
I mean, that's not his worst case scenario. His worst case scenario is, maybe it takes him a while to adjust physically to the NFL, but he'll figure it out, and he'll be second to the team behind Buda Baker in tackles.
Give me the numbers, right? Give me the projected numbers of tackles and interceptions and things like that.
115 tackles.
Okay.
3 sacks. 2 interceptions.
Last year, I believe Chase Young was the rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year in football. Patrick Queen was either second or third in the voting, the linebacker for the Ravens.
Okay.
You know, the team that's never lost a preseason game.
Patrick Queen last year, all 16 games played. You ready? I want to compare this because I think this makes sense. Patrick Queen, 106 tackles, 3 sacks, 1 interception. That would be a better year than what Patrick Queen had last year for the Ravens. And he was a top 2 or 3 vote getter for the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Hmm.
Patrick Queen.
Yeah.
That puts you in the conversation for
yes,
the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, it does.
106 tackles, 1 interception, and 3 sacks for Patrick Queen. He's basically saying he's going to have a better year than what Patrick Queen had last year.
That can't. Okay. I really like Daniel Jeremiah. Come on. That's not his floor. That's not his floor. That's not. I mean, that's the worst case scenario for Zaven Collins. No. I can come up with worse case scenarios than that. And they're not, I don't think, unrealistic. You know, I'm happy, and don't misinterpret me here. I'm happy that a guy that I'm a big fan of at the NFL Network and NFL.com is so bullish on Zaven Collins.
On Zaven.
I'm very happy that he's so bullish on Zaven Collins. I think that's really optimistic in terms of the low end of things.
I think part of it could be, you know, he's a day one starter. Like, you know, he's a day one starter.
That's a good observation.
So if I'm anticipating that he's going to start from day one, I haven't seen any signs in training camp or in preseason games that he's not capable of handling it. As a matter of fact, he's been pretty good. And wasn't was Jeremiah here? Or was that Riddick? That was Lewis Riddick. That
Lewis Riddick was here. Yeah.
So I think that's what you have to go by right away. You know he's going to play from day one. So you probably feel pretty good about, okay, if he stays and he plays every game, 100-plus tackles is a very decent amount. They'd be a very easy amount to get if you're playing every single game.
Yeah. I'm looking through the other guys that he's talking about defensively because they only picked 8 of them. J.C. Horn with Carolina, Patrick Surtain with the Denver Broncos, Micah Parsons with the Dallas Cowboys, Jalen Phillips with the Miami Dolphins, Jamine Davis with Washington, Kwity Paye with the Colts, Gregory Rousseau with the Bills. He's not as bullish on Rousseau. He's not as bullish on Kwity Paye, largely for the same reason you just said a second ago, that you know, the playing time might be tough to come by. It might be a little limited at first. He might not play every day. He might not play every snap. So I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, that part of the reason why he's so bullish on him.
Playing time.
Playing time. It's just the expectation. I mean, what choice do they have? They're going to play him a crap ton when he's out there, right?
Yeah, last year, I just looked this up because I wasn't sure. I thought Patrick Queen was second in the voting to Chase Young. It was actually Jeremy Chinn who was second in the voting. So Jeremy Chinn was second. Patrick Queen was third. Antoine Winfield, the Buccaneer safety, was fourth in the Rookie of the Year voting. So if he gets that, If he's able to play a lot and he puts up those type of numbers, then those numbers would warrant him being in a position for Defensive Rookie of the Year. What you're thinking is, okay, you're not down on what the top number is. You're down on the bottom number is he starts to play like Isaiah Simmons did, and then you pull him out of the lineup because he's not ready. And all of a sudden, he doesn't play 16 games. He plays 8.
Yeah. Isn't that
possible? I doubt it's going to happen. I mean, I do doubt it's going to happen. He's had a full training camp and off season and preseason games and everything, so I think he'll be more ready to handle this year than Isaiah Simmons was for last year.
It's funny that you mentioned last year because Jordan just pulled up a story from a year ago, July 9th, 2020, so a little more than a year ago, from Lance Zierlein, their NFL draft analyst, and he had Isaiah Simmons as his fourth leading candidate to be the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Okay.
Simmons, tremendous athletic specimen, rare versatility to go blah, blah, blah. I mean, just basically saying how good he is, and thought that the only 3 guys who had a better chance of being Defensive Rookie of the Year were Chase Young, Patrick Queen, and Kenneth Murray. Isaiah Simmons hit his floor last year. He hit it hard, all right? He was not ready to play at the NFL. He was exposed early, and the coaches were scared to play him until about halfway through the season. You're going to tell me that there isn't a scenario that's at least possible? Exactly the same thing happens to Zaven Collins? I'm going to tell you that it is. I'm going to tell you that there's a scenario where it's at least possible. It's not impossible. The same thing happens to Zaven Collins, where he gets out there and it's like deer in headlights. Oh,
I got this guy lined up wrong, that guy lined up wrong, I'm in the wrong spot, I missed a tackle, I got to sit for a game or two or here or there. And I think that's possible. I don't know if I'm saying it's likely, but you can't say it's impossible.
Does it make a little bit of sense that it's coming out now after most of training camp?
Yes.
Two preseason games.
He's had something
where,
to see.
Yeah, there's the one thing about Zaven Collins is that there's nothing that sticks out as a red flag.
No.
There's nothing like, oh, yeah, he's not ready. He's just not. For some guys, you know, okay, the guy's not ready to play. For Zaven Collins, there hasn't been any indication that he's not ready to play at the NFL right now.
When we come back in less than 4 years, Josh Rosen, now with his fifth NFL team, what are the chances that he can still salvage his NFL career? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Well, it didn't take long for Josh Rosen to find a home, released by the San Francisco 49ers just about a week ago. We speculated even then whether the former Cardinals first rounder, if that was it for him or not. It wasn't it at all. The Atlanta Falcons, and this is probably how it's going to be for Josh for a while, but the Atlanta Falcons saw their backup quarterback A.J. McCarron go down over the weekend with a torn ACL. His season is done, and suddenly the Falcons need themselves a backup quarterback, or at least need somebody to provide competition for the guy who was their third-string quarterback, to see if they can find an answer. And so Josh Rosen signed today by the Atlanta Falcons, his fifth NFL team since being drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, 10th overall, just three seasons ago.
Yeah, I was reading the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. One of the things they say is that, listen, oh, you know, it's possible that, you know, he earns a roster spot, but it's also possible that they will continue to search and see if somebody else becomes available that has more ties to the organization or their head coach as well. So I think Trevor Siemian's name has been brought up as somebody who, you know, they may take a look at. Logan Woodside could be a guy that comes up if he gets cut. Arthur Smith is the coach. He's got ties to those two guys, so maybe he wants somebody who he's got. But for now, those guys are still on a roster.
Right.
You had to get somebody because you need somebody to play in this preseason game. You need somebody to take the reps, so that's where Josh Rosen comes in.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I couldn't have, if you paid me, I couldn't have told you who the third-string quarterback was in Atlanta. And then after looking at their roster, if you paid me, I couldn't have told you where the kid even went to school. I'm like, who? I don't even know who this person is. I have no idea. And for the record, it's Felipe Franks.
Arkansas kid.
Yeah, only because I didn't
remember it.
Earlier.
I didn't remember it either.
I'm like, who the heck is Felipe Franks? I had no idea who he was. I had to look him up. So Josh Rosen goes in there. He, to your point, he probably has about 1 week to make a real positive impression on Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons organization, because a week from today, final cuts are due, which means a week from today, the preferred backup quarterback for the Falcons might become available. So Josh Rosen has about a week and one very big preseason game this weekend. I don't know who the Falcons are playing, to impress the Falcons organization and say, hey, no, I can do it. I can be your backup quarterback, because if he can't do it then and the preferred guy gets cut a week from now, they're probably going to dump Josh Rosen and go to the preferred guy. They might do that anyway. Josh Rosen could go 13 for 19 for 200 yards this
weekend. And they like somebody better because they know him.
Yeah.
And that guy knows the system a little bit better. Possible. And in the meantime, he survives. He survives to be on another team. And every guy that was drafted that year, first round, they're all starting. Week one, they're going to start week one. He's the only one.
Yeah.
His career has been, I mean, it's been a disaster. I mean, it's been he's made some money, but man, I mean, five different teams?
That is the perfect word that you just used a second ago.
A disaster?
No. Survives.
Survives. He's a survivor.
He's a survivor. At least just because, okay, for now, he's a survivor. There have been guys in this league who have made a career out of being quarterback survivors, right? Uh-huh. Matt Barkley has made a career out of being a quarterback survivor. He latches on with a team. He's a guy who knows his way around film study, who could be a good backup quarterback, who you could start in an absolute pinch if you had to, and a guy it's always handy to keep on a roster. There are dozens like Matt Barkley who, they're not the future, they're not going to play a role, but they survive in this league. That's the only, to me, Gambo, that's the only question left about Josh Rosen. Can he become a survivor in this league? He's not going to become a star. That's done. That ship has sailed. He's not going to be a star in this league. He's not going to be a starting quarterback in this league. Can he be a survivor in a league that needs survivor quarterbacks to fill gaps?
So you're 100% guaranteed that he'll never be a starter in this league?
I would bet a mortgage payment on it.
Okay.
A mortgage payment.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. The only thing is, man, he's 24 years old. He hasn't been in a good situation.
No, he hasn't. And that's something that Cliff and Josh, you remember their careers overlapped here in Arizona by about 3 months, right? Cliff took the job in mid-January, and mid-April, they drafted Kyler, and Josh was gone. Cliff today talked about Rosen needing the right situation.
Yeah, that position is... A lot of it's based on situation. As we know, he's obviously talented, very smart. And if he gets in the right situation, you know, after being around him just for a month or so, I mean, he could take full advantage of it. But got to land in the right situation.
I think that ship has sailed for Josh Rosen. And I think Cliff is being polite about Josh.
He would have to, I mean, this is real simple. He would have to latch on as the backup somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The starter goes down, he comes in, and he plays well. Everywhere he's been, like the first year in Arizona, thrown to the Wolves right away. Sam Bradford was supposed to play.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Bradford was so bad after three games that they put Rot Rose in, and he wasn't any good. He goes to Miami, and it was like, we'll take a flyer on you, but we're going to draft a quarterback.
Sure.
Didn't get a great day. Ended up going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick after Rosen played a little bit. He never got a long look. He would have to go somewhere. And the starter goes down, he comes in, he plays well. And that team either keeps him or somebody else says he's a starting quarterback.
Okay.
So I don't know that I would – I mean, look, I doubt that he makes anything out of his career, but I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't, like, say it's 100%.
So in your scenario, you think that if Josh Rosen is going to be – if he's ever going to be a starter in this league, let's talk about his current home right now, okay? So he sticks as the backup in Atlanta, hypothetically. Matt Ryan hypothetically goes down for the season in week 5. Josh Rosen stays in, plays well enough that the Falcons go, hey, that's our quarterback of the future. We don't need to draft one. We don't need to go look for one. When Matt Ryan's career is done, Josh Rosen's going to take over for him. Do you know how minuscule I think the chances are something like that could happen for Josh Rosen?
I don't disagree. I think it's minuscule. Matt Ryan's 36 years old. Probably going to play a few more years. Maybe he plays well enough, and then people say, okay, he's a good backup. He's got experience. He's come in. He's got to prove his worth in this. He hasn't proved his worth in this league with the few opportunities he's had.
Yeah,
he hasn't proved his worth. But man, he has not been in good situations.
I know
at
he
all.
Hasn't. He hasn't. And they've been terrible situations. We just got done in the last segment talking about best case scenario, worst case scenario for Zaven Collins. And for me, and this is just me talking, I think the best case scenario for Josh Rosen is that he's the next Matt Barkley and that he just survives in this league for 10 years. And he hops around and I'll be your backup. I'll be your third street guy. I'll be your camp guy. I'll be your this guy. I'll be your that guy. And eventually he's on the wrong end of a, hey, sorry, you've been cut conversation. I think that's the best case scenario for Josh Rosen. I think the worst case scenario is he's out of the league in a year or two. And that might be the most likely scenario.
That would be the most likely scenario is that the Falcons find somebody they like better, Rosen's cut, and he doesn't latch on with anybody. And that's it. Then nobody look, you know, once they stop looking at you, they stop looking at you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many phone calls your agent makes, that's it, kid.
No matter how high you were drafted in the first round by the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, when that happens, you are done. Texas, your thoughts on the former Cardinals quarterback, on anything that we're talking about on the Burns and Gambo show. The FanDuel text line, it is open to you at all times. 620-620 is where you can text us, and we'll read the best ones on the air. He was adamant that he did nothing wrong when he was ejected last week for the use of a foreign substance, to the point where he was easy to believe. What does it say that D-backs pitcher Caleb Smith was hit with a 10-game suspension today? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.